This Week in Radio Tech, episode 298, is brought to you by Lavvo and the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Console. Crystal Clear is the console with a multi-touch touchscreen interface. By the new Omnia 7 FM, HD, and streaming audio processor with Undo technology. Omnia 7 is a mid-priced audio processor with the sound and features you love. And by the Axia Rack IP Audio Mixing Console. Six faders in a rack mount console with big console features. OTT and IPTV are fairly new terms from the television or video industries. But more radio stations, podcasts, shows, and show clips are being delivered by the same or similar technologies. Former radio engineer turned TV network guru, Sherrod Mundy, joins Chris Tobin and me to talk about making today's audiences happy. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. I'm Kirk Harnack, your host. Delighted to be here. Yeah, I know I say that every week, but I really am. I love this show. It's my favorite show. You know, it's one of those things I can't stand to watch myself, but I love to do the show. I hope you can stand to watch it. Well, I've got a couple of people on the show besides me, so you won't have to look at me quite so much. This is a show where we talk about everything between the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And sometimes we go off kind of far afield, and we're going to do today. It's technology. It's technology that, hey, as broadcasters, as IT people, we ought to all be interested in. So hang on. We'll get to our guest in just a minute. While we're hanging on to our hats for that, let's bring in the best dressed engineer in radio from the New York City area. It's Chris Tobin. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Hello, Kirk. Thank you. Yes, it's going to be a good time. I'm looking forward to our topic, and everybody should be sitting back and enjoying it. So get your adult beverages out now and get ready for a good show.
I got a glass of water here. Just a glass of water. I do have a bowl of jelly beans, and I don't know if they're spiked jelly beans or not, but got them here.
Oh, hey, I have some iced tea.
Iced tea? Well, there you go.
Well, actually, Chris, it's an Arnold Palmer iced tea, so it's tea and lemonade.
Oh, well, there you go. That's, yeah. Yes. Yeah. You know, one time I was at a restaurant and I said, can I have an Arnold Palmer? And I actually forgot exactly what was in an Arnold Palmer. I know it's simple. And the waitress said, I don't know what that is. And I said, well, go ask the bartender. He probably knows. And so a few minutes later, the waitress came storming back. She was a little upset with me. She says, you could have just told me it was iced tea and lemonade. Sorry, I forgot what was in it.
Would love to have told you, but I just couldn't remember the two ingredients.
I remember the guy's name, but I didn't remember the two ingredients. This week in restaurant ordering. So Chris, is your week going well engineering-wise?
Yes, absolutely. It's going very well. Did some work on a Nortel transmitter. Worked out nicely. The support folks at Nortel are very good. I have to give them some credit. Came up with some wacky alarm messages from our SNMP, and they're like, well, that's interesting. He gets back to me and goes, wow, that's a problem we haven't seen in years. Pretty cool. Great. That's just great. Is it resolvable? He goes, absolutely. Do you have a spare parts kit? I said, I do. He goes, good. You find this part number, and then pull it out of the bag, and when you take the transmitter offline, plug it in, and it should be all good. And he was right. I mean, I had to do that at 3 o'clock in the morning, but it was all good.
Gotcha. Well, good deal. Glad that got fixed. Yeah, we ran into we were talking before the show, we ran into a hard drive failure, and the one thing about hard drives, they will fail sooner or later, hopefully later, but someday they will fail. This one failed sooner. It was a 3-week-old hard drive, and it just gave it up, and reinstall Windows 10, not my choice, but our IT guy likes it. So, and hey, it's got all the Axia stuff in it. You know, it's got the IP driver and Adobe Audition and stuff like that. So it's back up and running. Hey, enough about all that. Let's jump into the show here. We have a guest today, as we do about half the shows or more. And let's bring him on in. It's Sherrod Mundy. Sherrod, welcome in. Glad you're here.
Glad to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
I didn't realize, Sherrod, and you and I were trying to figure out about a half hour ago, we were talking on Skype, where do we know each other from? And we really haven't figured it out. You've been in the radio engineering and engineering management world for a while before you stepped over into our subject for today. But can you, like, back in the mid-90s, late 90s, you were working in network radio, weren't you?
I was indeed in your area. I was in the Nashville area for a few years working for a radio network there called Morningstar Radio Network at the time. It was subsequently purchased by Salem Communications, and I became part of the Salem family at that point. But I spent some years in Nashville there, indeed.
Cool. Well, hey, if during the course of the show, if you figure out some, you know, story, some something we could learn from your experiences there at the radio network, love to hear that too. But that's not going to be the focus of the show. But hey, if something comes to mind, please feel welcome to relate the story to us. We really, I love to hear stories that we can learn something from, not just, oh, this calamity happened, but okay, here's what I found out, and here's how I decided to keep that calamity from happening ever again. Those are the kind of stories that we like to tell. But Sherrod, you're here today. You're the VP of Engineering at Sky Angel, and I guess Sky Angel is a company that's gone through a couple of transformations, iterations. Tell me what Sky Angel is about right now. What do you guys do there?
Right now, what we do is we take content and aggregate it together into three different channels and provide those TV channels, I should say, since most of your audience is typically on the radio side of things. But we aggregate three channels of content together from various sources and provide that to Dish Network so that if you've got a Dish Network satellite receiver in your house, you've got the three Sky Angel channels. We've got them aimed at kind of the general market. We've got a religious teaching and talk show, our channel as well, and we've also got a channel that's aimed at kids and teens, and we call that KTV. So those three channels are on Dish Network and in 13 million homes across the U.S. right now.
Wow. Okay. We're going to hear about that coming up in just a minute. Also, I keep seeing this acronym, and I feel like I'm the last guy in engineering to understand what it means, but it's OTT. Now, we're not going to tell you what that means right now. Well, of course, our audience probably knows already. I'm, the last guy to know, but Sherrod is going to explain to us about OTT and IPTV. I think I can figure out IPTV because you've got some experience in that. That is coming up in just a few minutes. Right now, though, let's hear from our sponsor, Lavo, L-A-W-O, Lavo. They are the maker of some audio consoles. And Lavo is also the maker of some smaller consoles for radio. The Lavo Crystal Clear console is the one that we've been talking about because it's a great fit for a lot of radio stations. If you're interested in a console that is completely on a touchscreen interface. Now, of course, the hardware that does the mixing, that's off in a rack somewhere run by the Crystal engine. But the clear part of the Crystal Clear is this multi-touch touchscreen monitor. It's big, it's beautiful. The app fills up the whole screen. You don't even realize, you know, what the operating system is underneath there. And it's got these big faders. Now, I say big because it's just the right size to put your fingers on and move the faders up and down virtually. I mean, they move. Then you're moving the virtual fader. You've also got on and off buttons, of course, for each fader. You've got options. You've got a cue button, so you can put things into cue. And, you know, instead of having round knobs for the headphone volume and the monitor volume, well, a round knob is kind of hard to turn on a touchscreen. So they have linear faders for headphone volume and for control room volume. So that's the idea here. You walk up to this touchscreen, and that is your console experience. Now, the cool thing about having a console that's totally in software is that you're no longer constrained by button functions anymore. You can make a button do whatever you want it to, and at Lavo, they've made them contextual. So you'll never see a button that has features that don't work in that mode. Right? That if you've got a microphone, for example, a mic fader, you touch the options button, you get the things that apply to that microphone right then. Like auto level, you can push a button, have the talent talk, and it'll set the preamp, not the fader level, but the preamp level to the right amount. So they've got good headroom and they're well above the noise. So that's one of the features of a console like this where you can do everything in software. They've also got a feature where the host, if you want the host can talk over everybody else if that's needed. The hardware in this thing, there's a one rack unit box and it's got a available dual redundant power supplies. It's got a network connection for Ravenna or for AES-67 or both. And it's also got all the audio inputs and outputs that are there locally. So you've got a couple of mic inputs that have good mic preamps. You've got analog inputs, AES inputs. You've got some analog and AES outputs. Those are all built into the one rack unit Crystal engine that goes, well, wherever you want, wherever it's, you know, convenient to wire to. The clear part, that computer that has a big touchscreen on the top of it, well, that can go anywhere you want. Now, typically, it's going to go in your control room. But if you've got to move out of the control room one day and go somewhere else, not a problem. You can still control things that way. You could even control it remotely. So check it out on the website at lavo.com. And on that page for the Crystal Clear Virtual Radio Mixing Console. Over on the right-hand side, in the right-hand banner, you're going to see a picture there of Mike Dosh. He's the director of Virtual Radio Projects. And click on that. He will give you about a 6 or 7 minute video walkthrough of this console. So that's the Crystal Clear console from Lavo. Thanks very much, Lavo, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, back to This Week in Radio Tech. Kirk Harnack here along with Chris Tobin in the New York City area and our guest, Sherrod Monday. So, Sherrod, this acronym that I know nothing about, OTT, it seems very popular. Well, not only what does it mean, but what does OTT imply from a business and viewing model?
Wow, you're going to put me on the spot for remembering my alphabet and the acronym soup that we live in these days. So yeah. I'll do my best. Over the top is what it stands for. OTT meaning over the top of existing infrastructure, really pertaining to the internet, ultimately, is what this is all about. It's not on a private network to the final consumer. It's actually using the infrastructure from people like Comcast and Cox and AT&T and Verizon, Fios, Lines, whomever the providers are. The content being delivered is not delivered over the airwaves, it's delivered over the internet, and that's what OTT stands for. The IPTV, I think you may have mentioned it already, but that stands for Internet Protocol Television. And if you've watched Netflix, if you have watched Apple TV, you've been watching IPTV-type content delivered usually over the top in those contents.
You know, earlier we were talking about viewing habits and how technology has made viewing habits, changes in viewing habits available. And then I'm going to guess that it's an iterative process that changes in viewing habits then drive the technology. Talk to Chris and me, about that relationship between technology, OTT and IPTV, and on-demand or full-time streaming, whatever, how that relationship works with viewing habits and what people are doing with content these days.
Good question. I'm reminded of Steve Jobs' famous quote, customers don't know what they want until we tell them they want it. In this case, it's something that if we look back in the history a few years back when the iPad was released, it was really revolutionary and something that we saw prove to be a market change in our business model here at SkyAngel. Really, that was the first time when you could really get good video and take it with you on the road where you weren't just constrained to a small little 4-inch phone screen or something along those lines. This was really allowing you to put a full-length feature movie on your tablet and carry it with you. And as phones got bigger, obviously, it was one of those things, kind of the chicken and the egg, which comes first? Are we dealing with, we want larger phone screens because we want to watch video, or is it, we have larger phone screens, so let's go watch some video? It's really tough to tell what drives this. Obviously, there's a push and a pull relationship between the manufacturers and the consumers, but the broadcasters and the content owners have really seen this, and especially in the last few years, you've seen a market increase in the number of broadcasters and content owners that have decided to take their content out over the top so that it is now consumable on all sorts of devices and no longer just in a broadcast model where you have to have a cable company line into your house or a pair of rabbit ears on your TV or something. Now it's actually being consumed in anything that can be connected to the internet just about.
So Chris Tobin and I really haven't gotten a chance to talk about this subject prior to the show. So Chris, right here on the air, I'm going to put you on the spot. And Chris, I know that you've dealt with a number of clients in your consultancy. What has been some of your experience with OTT and IPTV as technologies?
I helped the IPTV. I helped a couple of folks do TV backhauling, I guess you'll call it that. That's what people are familiar with. And they were using it to stream out of various servers and across campus. It was for a university. And it was pretty fun. And the OTT, I did a little bit of work with a company. They're out of California. I can't think of the name of them now. But they were doing OTT installation at a hotel. IPTV installation at a hotel, and they were working with on a project that involved OTT back office stuff that was going on. I just was fascinated by the fact that you can do so much with this, and you're limited really not by the technology as much as by how do you want things to get out to the end user. You know, the iPod changed things, and everything has been changing over time. That's been the best part of the learning experience with the OTT and the IPTV. I'll use the acronyms to go crazy, but there's a lot you can do. And the one university we worked with for the IPTV, we started sending video streams from various classrooms and conference centers, and they were bringing them into this aggregate of servers and just sending it out. And I mean, there were people who lived somewhere upstate in Pennsylvania, and they were watching stuff as we're sitting in New York City with it. I thought it was great.
So Sherrod, you know, the company you're working with, Sky Angel, they've gone through some changes in what they're offering via you know, satellite TV versus over-the-top and IPTV. So we're going to talk, you know, in technical terms, not necessarily about what your employer is doing, but in general technical terms about over-the-top and IPTV. First of all, I kind of want to get a little bit better establishment of your experience before you came into this. I seem to recall, Sherrod, that when I was a contract engineer dealing with radio stations exclusively, somehow I met with you or talked to you on the phone or something. So you were firmly planted in the radio business without necessarily any thought of going into television. So tell us a bit more about your radio experience, and especially with networks, and then what came along that moved you into the television world?
Good question. I started out back when I was in college working for a local radio station. Really what I started out doing was just board hopping. A lot of us got our jobs started in radio that way, just helping out at the radio station as a volunteer, turning the fader up and turning it back down a little bit later. And what happened was they had bought this automation computer, but they didn't know how to really make it do what they needed to control the radio channels and remote controlled mixers and faders and audio switchers weren't really out there yet for computer control. So what I ended up doing from the very beginning was working myself out of my volunteer job, and I programmed the computer automation to take my job away so that I didn't have to keep on turning the faders up and down every week. But what they saw was that gave me my first experience into the IT side of things and really getting my teeth cut in the computer side of broadcasting in the radio environment all the way back from the beginning, about two decades ago at this point. After graduated college, I went to a radio network in Nashville called Morningstar Radio Network. It's now a part of Salem Communications, and they were feeding content to about a couple hundred radio stations at that point. And my job was not only to keep it on the air, but also to provide support to the radio station affiliates. And if I can take an aside, you mentioned if I had any good words of wisdom there.
Yeah,
I was dealing with a satellite radio or satellite receiver manufacturer once, and I was talking with them about their satellite receivers, and we got to talking about how to support affiliates who sometimes can be a little bit on the problematic side in the radio world. Mainly, like you as a contract engineer, I worked with a lot of contract engineers at the time, and they don't always have a whole lot of knowledge in specific areas, especially on satellite delivery and things. And so this one particular contract engineer had called up and said, "Well, I'm out here to line up this satellite dish to pick up all these satellite channels up there. Now, when you guys going to turn the lights on for me?" And the guy I was talking to at this vendor kind of stopped and scratched his head, and he goes, I'm sorry, I just don't know what you're talking about. What lights you mean? Well, them lights on that satellite, them navigational satellites, they got to have lights on them just like boats do, don't they? I want you to turn the lights on so I can look up in the sky and see where it is and point my satellite dish at it. And the concept of this was, the guy was dead serious is the unfortunate part of this. And so you run into some folks like that just in different technologies, you end up finding people who have different levels of expertise. And you and I both in contract work that we've done and still do now, it's one of those things. And Chris, I'm sure you've done the same thing. You end up having to kind of like gently handhold them through this process and not make them feel dumb, but help them get educated. And that's really one of the things that I found has been common as I moved from the radio side of things and on to the Texas Texas location of Salem, where I ended up supporting about 1,000 affiliates. It was really the same application. And when I moved over from that to Salem or to Sky Angel about 10 years ago, it really is just the application of good engineering concepts and good interactions with people and dealing with video and content really isn't that much different than dealing with audio and content and dealing with people. It really just becomes a matter of applying the engineering practices properly in different scenarios. But along the way, you get some of these humorous stories, like the guy that wants satellite lights turned on, that to really just help you kind of enjoy your work sometimes.
Chris may feel the same way, although Chris, you probably got more confidence than I do, but probably more common sense too, that if I were ever offered a job in television, I just think I'd feel overwhelmed. And maybe you can allay me in my fears. Maybe you can say, because I've met a lot of TV engineers, worked with several, who I think are just absolutely some of the smartest guys on earth. I have met some TV engineers just amazing. Now, I've met some great radio engineers too, but I'm a radio engineer. I get that. But boy, you move into this whole realm where you've got audio to handle, and you've got all these video technologies to handle too. Sharon, I guess what I want to know is what gave you the confidence that you could move into that world? Like, you were already in the networking, the broadcast network world, so you were accustomed to that. What gave you some confidence that you could move into this world of television network and you know, not fall flat on your face?
Well, that's a good question. The one thing that I would really have to say gave me the confidence to move into that role, when I actually did ask my potential employer at Sky Angel, I said, do you feel confident that I'd be able to bring in the skills that you need here and still be a contributing part team member? And he said, yes. And what it worked out to be and what allowed me to make that transition well was honestly a team effort. And that is that we had some good, strong broadcast engineers who really had a lot of experience in the TV side of things. They knew the analog video. They knew the backhauls. They knew the satellite delivery, just like I was working with at on the radio side of things. So I was going to supplement them in the engineering, the satellite delivery, and the internal audio that we did, because obviously we have audio going along with the video. And they were weak on that audio side, I'll admit, mentioned. So I ended up having to help them on some audio things. It wasn't just anymore, oh yeah, by the way, we're pictures and we happen to have audio. It was really sort of thing of, hey, let's clean up the audio and get some good processing in here and fix some of these problems. So I did that. But the main thing was I didn't have to focus solely on the TV side of it from day one. It was the thing that I got to learn because we had other engineers who were actually taking care of that in a primary role. So I picked it up on the way. But what my focus was when I joined Sky Angel was really just on the background that I'd had in the IT side of things, having managed the IT infrastructure for Salem Radio Network, and also having done the computer and the automation side of things and the radio network and the satellite and everything else. It was really those skills that I brought in to help out Sky Angel transition from the analog into the digital and the automated side of things instead of old analog tapes that were being played. So that was a set of skills that I brought really to complement the team. And I think that's the best answer I can give you, is really I didn't have to know everything coming in day one. I just had to know the skills that were lacking in the team that was already here and being built with the other engineers. And so all together, we ended up doing a great job in the video and the audio and the radio and the stream and all those sides of the satellite when I first joined Sky Angel. And then about a year and a half after I joined Sky Angel, we actually moved into the IPTV business and over the top to stay away from the acronyms there. But we moved into the over-the-top delivery model. And suddenly all that IT experience that I had gathered in my initial days in the radio side of things became very useful, because now, hey, we've got the video, we've got the audio, and by the way, we have to deliver it over internet. And so the routing skills, the network building skills, the telecommunications that I had dealt with back on the terrestrial backhauls, the T1 lines and such and sundry back on the radio side, all of that was just really magnified and amplitude by a bunch of bits. Instead of dealing with a megabit and a half for an uncompressed audio signal, now an uncompressed video signal is 270 megabits per second.
Yeah.
So that gets pretty, and that's for a standard def picture. Video, high definition actually goes way up from that. So it really, when you start dealing with that, MPEG compression becomes pretty much the norm in most broadcast TV plants, just because of the amount of space involved. Instead of dealing with hard drive audio systems that you need to have 500 gigabytes of audio, now we're dealing with 500 gigabytes of video, but for the offline storage systems, we're dealing with terabytes and hundreds of terabytes. And so that's where you get to have a whole lot of different size of things.
So it sounds like you already had IT experience before you went to work at Sky Angel and became responsible for distributing IP television to the U.S. and a part of the world. You had people watching all over the world. I kind of get that. Seems like the kind of thing, though, if you make a mistake, it could really affect viewership.
It does.
Does that make you nervous? Was that on your mind?
It does. I mean, when you start talking about, like right now, I'm supporting video or in charge of the video plant for delivering content up to 13 million homes. So, yes, if we mess up in the network side of things, then lots of people get affected. But I'll admit a little bit of a funny story back from when I started out at my radio broadcast side in Nashville there. And my former employer knows this, so it won't be telling stories on myself that they haven't heard, but it was one of those things in my early days. I was learning the automation control side of things for the satellite receivers, the Wegener satellite receivers that we used to use to distribute the radio. And I was learning the ropes, so to speak, and finding out what all these different commands did. And one of them was called mute all. And I typed this into the command prompt in my receiver in my office that I had set up for a test. Sure enough, it muted. And I was like, okay, this is kind of cool. I know what that does. And I unmuted it back. And I did a couple more times. And I didn't think anything of it until all of a sudden we started getting phone calls from the radio stations into the control room saying, where did our audio go? We're off the air. It's just coming and going. And I suddenly realized I'm muting all of the satellite receivers on the radio network. So I kind of realized that I shouldn't be using the all command too much on that platform. and now you start realizing that we had 200 radio stations and I was muting all of them simultaneously in all of the markets across the U.S. that were taking the show. And I suddenly realized I need to tread a little more carefully. And ever since then, in my opening days, I've taken a lot more of a bit of a cautious approach to learning new technologies and learning systems and not just going in with like a bull in the china shop anymore. Those things you learn straight out of college pretty much the hard way.
All means all, doesn't it?
It does mean all. And I was thinking I had put my receiver into a group that I could call all, but it wasn't. That was a global.
Gotcha. Oh, man. Chris, you got any thoughts at this point before our mid-show break? Chris?
No. I can agree. I working at two different networks, I run into a similar situation doing some testing at the head end and discovered also the hard way that some of the commands that I was doing were global, even though the book that I was following from Scientific Atlanta was, no, this is a local session test. You'll be fine. No, totally wrong. Apparently, there was a typo on that page and found out afterwards. But yeah, I too was turning on and off things and sending down audio down the emergency news channel. So you can just imagine all those news affiliates getting this weird, strange alerts and they're coming down the line going, what the devil is this? Yeah, that was a fun day. So yeah, I can share that. I know what that feels like.
Yes.
Oh, good. Hey, you're watching This Week in Radio Tech, episode 298. I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tobin in New York, and Sherrod Mundy is our guest. He's the VP of Engineering at Sky Angel Television Network. And we've been talking about over-the-top television, over-the-top, OTT and IPTV, transitioning from radio engineering into television. And what's coming up on the show is Sherrod is going to tell us what he can about some of the mechanics behind the scenes. How does this actually work? How do you serve up 13 million households or however many it may be with television? And a good number of those may be getting it over the internet. And I want to hear what servers do you end up having or computers at your place? What kind of hard drive storage capacity? How if you've got people, if 2,000 people are watching the same show but starting at different times, how busy are the read-write heads on that hard drive? I don't know these things. And then how does a CDN, a content distribution network, play into that? Does that help you out? How does it help you out besides the obvious of just having closer connect points for your viewers? So that's coming up in just a few minutes. Our show, This Week in Radio Tech, is brought to you in part by my friends at Omnia and the Omnia 7 FM audio processors. This, I gotta tell you, I only know about the Omnia 7 personally because I own one, I'm part owner of the station, so I own part of one. It's the Omnia 7 FM. We bought ours for our station in American Samoa. Now, American Samoa, we have a flagship station there. We call it 93KHJ because it's 93.1. The call sign is KKHJ. And we got that Omnia 7 processor in, and it sounds absolutely amazing. Our general manager, our morning man, other people that work at the station say that 93KHJ is the best sounding station by far on the island of Tutuila in American Samoa. That's where the city of Pongo Pongo is. Now, I know I'm talking about a faraway place. They're much closer, Omnia 7s. There's probably one in your town or nearby because we've been shipping them out the door at Omnia lickety-split, one after another, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. So I know there's a lot of them out there, but here was my experience. So in American Samoa, it's a little bit hard to have a full-time engineer or even find a good part-time engineer. So what we did, this is what you may have to do too someday, we got the Omnia 7 shipped to American Samoa, and our general manager, who is not an IT idiot, I mean, the guy can set an IP address. He kind of knows if something looks right or not. He knows what the RJ45 connection is for. So our general manager in American Samoa unboxed this thing, made room for it in the rack, put it in the rack, and we didn't have enough audio outputs to feed the audio input to it. So that was going to have to wait till last minute, you know, punch it over. But he did get the IP address set and put the Ethernet cable to it. And so I could remote control it from Nashville, Tennessee. So I did. I could control it either with an app on a PC there in American Samoa, or I could use the same app running on a PC here at my office in Nashville, Tennessee. And I did it both ways just to make sure it worked. So going that into the Omnia 7, I had a few presets I was kind of interested in, thinking, this is probably a good place to start. And I had an idea of what the audio input level would be. And I had a vague idea of what the composite, because our link at the moment is a composite analog link, I had an idea of what the composite output level should be. And also, at first, we were going to use the RDS that we had, the RDS generator, but later on, we switched over to the RDS that's built in to the Omnia 7. So, long story short, got it all set up, and I said, Joey, let's move it over. And Joey moved over the audio input cables, and he moved over the BNC connector that goes to our STL system, and bam, we were back on the air with levels that were wrong. Okay, so in about 3 seconds, I got the input levels to the Omnia 7 set correctly, and in about another 15 seconds, I got the output level set correctly according to the mod monitor at the station, and bam, we switched over the audio processor just like that. And then I got to tweak on it a bit, make sure everybody was happy with the way it sounded. And a few days later, we started using the RDS encoder that's inside the Omnia 7 as an option. So you can, and then of course we hosed our data into there. Our RDS data from our automation system goes in by IP, and they've been just delighted with it. I can check on it anytime from right here in Nashville or from anywhere else just by running the remote app for the Omnia 7 and get a beautiful display of what's happening with it. And best of all, the station's happy. We're selling lots of ads. The salespeople are happy. The morning guy's happy. Everybody's happy with it. So that's my success story with an Omnia 7 FM. Do you know how much these things cost? Well, the U.S. list price is under $6,000. You're getting technology in the Omnia 7 FM that used to cost literally well over $10,000, and now it's under $6,000. Check it out, if you would, at telosalliance.com. Click on Omnia and go to the Omnia 7. By the way, it does FM and it does HD. It can even do process for streaming if you want to do that. It's got all the features, the undo technology, the declipper. It's just absolutely amazing. Check it out. Omnia 7 FM. Thanks very much, Omnia, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And thanks for giving me a really cool experience in setting up an Omnia 7 from 8,000 miles away. All right. Our show's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 298. Chris Tobin, I think you've probably heard that story too many times, but I got to tell you, that was a blast setting that thing up so far
Absolutely.
Away.
There's no reason. That's the best part of some of these things, setting it up far away. I did that with a friend of mine last year. We did a couple of processors remotely, and it was pretty cool. And then using a box to listen to the audio come back, slightly delayed over IP, but it was pretty cool. I liked it.
The Omnia 7's remote control program will stream audio back to you for listening. If you've got a great connection, it'll send linear audio back to your PC. If you have, it does this automatically. It measures the connection speed and decides what kind of audio bitrate reduction it's going to do to let you hear it, so you can at least hear it. But if you've got a great connection, you get linear audio back. So it's just amazing what you can do with it. I just highly recommend
it. That's powerful. I like that.
Yeah.
Careful, there's a gremlin behind you.
This is
behind you.
Hey, look at that. I thought I heard something behind me. Are you going to say hi to everybody?
Hi.
Hi. Okay. All right. You've made your appearance now. You're going to let us do the rest of the show? Yeah. Mr. Little Angry Bird. All right. That's my son, Michael.
That's an OCA. Does he get paid for that?
No. He gets set in a corner for it. Yeah, I see you, buddy. I'll be done with the show in another 30 minutes, okay, or less. All right. So Sharon Mundy is our guest here, along with Chris Tobin and me. So Sharon, I'm not sure how much you're allowed to tell us or how much you're not. If I put it this way, Sharon, I'm building a new OTT IP TV system for on-demand video. I've got literally tens of thousands of hours of video that we've collected over the years, I want to make it available on demand, and maybe I want to have a streaming channel so people don't have to do the work of selecting something on demand. They're on all the time anyway. So I've got a couple different models here. What am I going to need to put together to make that kind of thing happen? What in today's worldwide environment?
Well, these days, obviously, the cloud is a strong player these days. When we started out about 8-9 years ago doing IPTV, really there wasn't this whole cloud infrastructure where you could just go buy services or rent space or rent bandwidth nearly as well and as readily. Amazon Web Services wasn't really out there, and all these other players that offer content and conversion didn't really factor in. But that's what I would honestly be looking at these days, and that's what I've looked at recently for doing like what you're asking about. One of the key things that I would need to ask as a contract engineer, if you came to me as a contract or as a client, I would say, well, let's start by looking at what you have. If it's all in analog tape form, there's going to be a lot of dubbing to get that going somewhere. If you've got it in hard drive or digital form already on your network somewhere, then maybe the best option is to farm that out to rent space on either Amazon Web Services, where you can actually rent servers. You can actually get transcoding services from a number of vendors, and I won't name them all, so we're not giving unauthorized promotions here, but there are a number of different providers out there that have online conversion services, and what you can build is a profile where I dump the video file in whatever format it is, whether it's an MPEG-2 container file with MPEG-2 video and MPEG-1 layer 2 audio, and I want it to come out in this flavor or that flavor. You can build all these different profiles and say, when I dump this file into the watch folder, it's going to come out in these a certain number of types coming out. But part of it really is before we even get to the conversion thing, what we have to establish is, what do you want to do with it? Where do you want this content to be available? And that's the tricky question. You might say, well, I just want anybody to watch it. Well, okay, do you want them to watch it on a television through something like a Roku box? Do you want them to watch it on Apple TV box? Those are two entirely different processes for how you get that content there. Apple TV, you've got to go out and get them to actually authorize your channel. They pick and choose who they allow on the Apple TV, or what's called a walled ecosystem, which really just means kind of like building a little garden and building high walls around it and only letting certain people into the garden. And so you have to actually get approved to get on that system. If you want to get on the smart televisions, like the LG systems, unless it's an app or a smart app that goes out to the CDNs, like you referred to earlier, the content delivery networks, you might have a walled garden there to build it. Yahoo Television, for example, you had a private walled garden as well. So we have to approach getting it on TV in one manner. But then you also have the mobile devices, which are at their own world. Literally, I saw an infographic about a year ago or something, and it was along the lines that there were like 155 different profiles that you have to pick from when you want to get content going to a mobile device, because you've got everything from your iPhones to your Android phones. You've got your iPads going one side of it, and then your Android tablets going to another. And then within each of these families, you've got all the different sizes. You've got the one aspect ratio versus a different aspect ratio for a larger format. The iPad mini is different than the iPad, which is different than the iPad 2, and the screen resolutions. Then you have the Retina displays on the newer iPads. All these things come into how much resolution do you want to provide. You obviously have to provide some baseline version that everybody's kind of like the lowest common denominator, and Apple certainly has their well-published spec on that. But you really have to just decide how much transcoding work and storage space do I want to go through in order to have this content available. How broadly? If you're targeting the Roku, then you can go with some of the published specifications for that, where you have a certain limited number of adaptable bitrate or ABR formats, where you only have to encode it maybe one file or one video file goes in. It's going to come out maybe in five different profile settings for an adaptable bitrate, so that the adjustable bitrate earlier, in the same way that the Roku box will do that. The Apple format does that with HLS, as they call it. So all these different questions go into really just deciding, let's build a box and try to define in that box, what do you want to fit in that box? Do you want the Androids? Do you want the tablets? And then you have to get into segmentation and how many consumers are watching on one type of device versus another. So we really have to design some business or make some business decisions really at the front end of it. And then the business or the technical infrastructure comes in the back. But the technical players can be anywhere from, like I said, Amazon to other providers, the elemental folks, Harmonic, Inlet, all these names, some of them are obviously combined these days in the video encoding side of it, but there are different players that can get the video into the right format. We here at SkyAngel actually use a program that's owned or provided by a company that has hardware appliances, but we do most of our conversion on a software program called Carbon Coder. It's kind of a Swiss Army knife. You can put just about any type of video file into it and get out just about any flavor you want. So that's what we use when we have to do the video conversions here. It's a standalone installation, but it can be available on rental basis in the cloud as well. So there's really many different ways to get this stuff converted. And then you were asking specifically about like on demand. That frankly comes kind of easy because all we have to do really is once we get all these different video files, it's going to take up a lot of storage space. And then you just need to decide, are we going to store that content here at our location or at some co-located facility somewhere and have it available so that when people ask for it, they come get it from us. Or you have to decide, do I want to push all this out to the CDN and have them responsible for taking care of it so that whenever anybody needs it, it's already available in the cloud. And when they ask for it, it's immediately at the edge, already right next to them, and they get better quality of service by using the CDN. When SkyAngel started out doing the IPTV, we actually, our first incarnation or version of the IPTV over the top content wasn't through a CDN. We just had servers located up in New York and another set out in California, and all of our customers were pointed at either New York or California, and they were on 5 gigabit per second and 10 gigabit per second pipes, and those are, like I mentioned earlier, a lot bigger than what we have to deal with in the radio side of things. But what happens then is you have to watch the bandwidth management on a single server and bandwidth going into the facility, and then you have to do load sharing and split that stream out to multiple servers, and you have to watch the CPU utilizations. And so it gets kind of complicated. We had a technical partner that helped us with a lot of that. But that version really couldn't grow very well because as you scale more and more customers, what happens is you start running out of bandwidth. And that's when we ended up going into a CDN architecture where it was pushed out through some of the prominent CDNs out there. And suddenly our quality of service to our viewers actually went up quite a bit when we did that version change. So the CDNs definitely would be the way to go if you're going to do the video on demand, because it's easy to upload the files in a non-real-time fashion, and they're just out there and available. But then you mentioned also about, let's say you want to do a streaming channel to kind of do a highlight reel or a live presentation. At that point, we start talking infrastructure where we have to start building networks that handle quality of service. We have to build private backhauls to get the content out to the CDNs, which is how we did it at SkyAngel. We did everything on private networks before we handed it out to the customers. But all of our backhaul infrastructure, we ended up with a pretty extensive wide area network. As you mentioned earlier in the show, a lot of those nodes here in the U.S., we had some internationally to gather content from external facilities and over in Europe and up in Canada. And we worked with a couple of different telcos to handle all those infrastructures there. But it really gets to be a lot of network infrastructure, and that's where my IT background really provided proved to be quite helpful in that, was because now instead of just doing audio or just doing video, it was building out networks and learning Cisco gear and infrastructure and fiber connectivity. And so a lot of that sort of stuff really got built on top of the skills that I'd already acquired. And that's really what, to go back to what you were talking about in the earlier segment, that's really how an engineer who's interested in video, who might just be a radio engineer right now, I would just encourage him, say, hey, if you've worked with audio and you know the skills, especially in the digital realm, and you know how what it takes to do impedance matching and make sure your terminations are good, those skills are directly applicable in the TV environment. And you can probably make that move a lot easier than you think. Looking back on it after 10 years, I'm glad I did that transition. It was a good jump for me, and I still love radio. It's kind of my passion since I cut my teeth on it, but I enjoy the TV side of it too. It certainly has provided an interesting career for me so far.
Chris, and Sherrod both, I am amazed by a couple of things that you said, Sherrod. And Chris, I'm sure that this is probably obvious to you, but I never thought about having file conversions and storage done in the cloud. I figured you'd have a big server room at SkyAngel where all this stuff would be stored, and you don't have to do that, do you?
Well, we don't have to, but you mentioned hard drives earlier with Windows 10. I am way sick of hard drives. I've been replacing hard drives in a bunch of our NAS systems lately. We have several different NAS systems that handle our video content that we actually play out of our automation systems. One of those systems in particular was a 36 terabyte array. And when you start having hard drives go in those things, it gets to be a pain to try to keep them up. I actually literally just replaced all of that with brand new hard drives because the old ones were aged and past the point of reliability. And I've learned a lot through that whole process, like the fact that the original guy who put this NAS system in years ago used desktop hard drive models. Well, those do not work well for constant thrashing of read and writes at the order of 10, 15, 20 megabits per second nonstop. They just get thrashed. Hard drives die. The desktop hard drives aren't built for that kind of wear and tear. And trying to save money on the front end of things, especially in the broadcast side, all of us, I think, have seen and probably could share many horror stories of trying to be penny wise ends up being pound foolish in the long run and costing a lot more money and certainly frustration and time to fix it and build it right the second time around.
Well, so often as broadcast engineers, as radio engineers, Chris, I'm sure you've been through this too. If we're buying something, sometimes I just default to the cheapest thing if I've got experience with it and know that it's okay. And I don't even think about, why is that hard drive $212 and this one is $89? Recently, a couple of years ago, I built up some audio service and I started looking at these specs. Wait a minute. This $212 hard drive is actually a whole lot better for a variety of reasons. And I got to looking at the specs I don't want this $89 hard drive to fail. I want the $212 hard drive to keep on working. Chris, have you ever had an epiphany like that, or have you always just been in the world where you got to look at everything all the time?
Well, I had the chance of working with two broadcast companies that thought in that manner, and I just carried it over. When I worked for two radio networks, realizing that 5.9's reliability, systems uptime, and everything else relies on knowing whether or not to be penny-wise or pound foolish. And I will tell you that two places I worked at, two networks, I worked with the audio IT guys, and we came up with, we discovered that one of the automation systems, because we were having issues with the audio playout, we couldn't figure out why. It turns out it was the byte size, sorry, is that right? On the hard drive, when you format the drive and the sector sizes. It turns out we realized that the sector size was good for data for the office, but when it came to the audio and what we were doing with it, it was just a little too small. We had to increase it. And after we did that, the issues with the servers playing out the audio went away. And that's when I started realizing, you know what? It's well worth looking at, how will I keep this up? I'll call it 5.9's, 99.999% of the time. And it's paid off. I will say, Sherrod's right. I will say, if I'm going to spend $200 on a drive where I could, and someone says, I can get one for $85, I'm like, no, I'm going for the $200. I don't want that phone call. And I've been doing that for years. Yeah, I will tell you, it's paid off. I do it with laptops. I mean, I went into a place, a friend of mine calls me up and says, I'm having a problem. He does an internet streaming service and audio only. He goes, I'm having a problem with X, Y, and Z. I go in and he's using three desktop machines as servers. And I'm like, what are these doing? He goes, well, they're my servers. Like, are you running server software on these? He goes, yeah, that's why they're servers. I'm like, oh, really? and needless to say, between the temperature of the power supplies being quite high and the hard drives almost, you couldn't even put your fingers on them. I said, I think we need to rethink this. So there's a lot to be said for the penny wise, pound foolish approach. I would caution anyone to go for the cheap thing nowadays, especially in IT.
The fact that you mentioned the word audio IT guys, and that's a blessing that they had that, because I think a lot of stations these days, especially in the radio side, but not so much maybe on the TV side, but there are a lot of stations that really they've got their broadcast guys and then they've got their IT guys, and really they don't talk. I had the fortune of sitting a couple years ago in a meeting between a major broadcaster, and they had literally different engineering departments. They had an engineering side which handled the broadcast infrastructure, and then they had their IT guys who were sitting in there to try to really learn about what it's going to take to support this new automation and playout system in the IP realm of things, because they knew that was coming. They were in there learning, and a lot of IT guys say, I've worked with some unfortunately in the past, who just said, I don't know anything about broadcast. I don't want to, because that's not my thing. And in the same way, some of the broadcast guys I've worked with in the past have said, look, I'm a broadcast guy and I don't know any of that computer stuff. And you can't have that anymore. You've got to have people who can speak both languages. That's really one of the things where I feel fortunate to have gotten that blessing from early on. I saw both sides of it, and I really saw the future coming, and I've been in the right position here at Sky Angel to be put in charge of the IPTV platform when it was launched, to understand the importance and really the interdependencies of IT and broadcast. You can't look at one versus the other. They have to both be considered and at the same time. And I think your story of desktop hard drives doing servers, Chris, that was I've been there, done that. I've seen it. So it definitely factors in.
Well, I will say that the audio IT guy was two places I worked. I forced the issue of the engineering and IT departments to learn each other's crafts for that reason, because I told them, I said, look, this is the deal. The future is this. This is what we need to do. And if we're not going to do it, we're going to have problems. And I hit heads with several executives, but I sat down. I said, here's how it's going to work. This group of people, the engineers and the audio IT, or I'll call them, you know, the broadcast IT folks, the bits, we are involved in a network that is revenue generating. So if you don't want us to work together, that's fine. But I just want that in writing, because when the revenue starts to go down because of failed network issues, because someone decided to reboot a Cisco switch in the middle of the day, then you know what? You need to know why you're not producing, or I should say delivering, commercials or committed dollars. Yeah. Well, after a few of those meetings, it started to sink in. But
yeah.
I will say that another place I worked at, we had a broadcast studio, several PCs in the furniture. And I started working there, and maybe in there about a month. And one of the IT guys goes, I don't know what the problem is. We had to replace the computers four times in the air studio. I was like, four times? What the heck's going on in there? And they were like, they gave me all these weird reasons. So I said, I'll tell you what, I'll take a look-see. After it all said and done, the problem was this. Picture broadcast studio furniture. Nice furniture. Looks really good. You know, everything about it. All the doors are closed. Everything's cabinets. But the front is where you have the rack rails for your normal broadcast equipment, which is usually forced air cool or designed to be in a cabinet where there's no circulating air. Move fast forward to now, we're all about IT. You put three or four workstation CPUs in that same cabinet. It's pushing out, what, 450, 500 watts of, you know, heat easily into a cabinet that has no exhaust. So what happens? It starts sucking the hot air back into itself. What does a computer do when it overheats? Well, you
shuts
get
down.
Blue screen of death. You get weird error messages. You get applications that suddenly act funky. Or sometimes it just stops completely. So I didn't tell anybody anything, left everything in place, just took the doors off the back of the cabinets because they were low enough that you would notice it, let it go for a week. Went to my usual, you know, every 2 weeks, special meeting. Got to have these meetings. If you don't have the cover letter for your fax reports and everything else, these progress reports. And I asked the question, has anybody reported problems in Air Studios 1 and 3? And the director goes, matter of fact, no. We've gone for almost a week and a half without any trouble reports. What happened? I take off the floor. I show, this door cover needs to be removed from all the studios that have the following piece of furniture. It was overheating. I did a whole demonstration using a thermal IR, you know, thermometer and stuff. And the IT guy looked at me like, how did you figure that out? How did you know that was the case? And it's like, well, in my particular discipline, you learn how to troubleshoot. You understand, you look at the application, the workflow. So ever since then, this is 18 years ago, I've made it a point wherever I'm at to find out who is working together and who's not, and try to bring them together, because heat is a killer. And same is true for laptops. I've worked with news people working with laptops in the field, and they've got their laptop covered with papers. They're doing things, and all of a sudden they call me. My laptop's frozen. I don't know what happened. I was like, how many papers you have covering the vent?
It's not frozen. It's cooked.
It's cooked, yeah. They're like, well, you know, I did notice it was getting kind of warm. Okay, you've reached that thermal overload point.
Yes.
So, take a step back, look at it, and you're right, Sherrod. Don't take the attitude, I'm the engineer for this, and that's the IT guy, and the two shall never meet. No. That's over. Anybody who still thinks that way, it's like job security. Don't write anything down. It's job security. You know what I tell you? Go outside and pound sand, because it's over. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard,
we're all in this together on that same broadcast roof. I'm sorry, Sherry, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, going back to when I joined Sky Angel, I mentioned how we had a good team here. I say had because one of the guys that actually brought me on board was an old legacy broadcaster. He knew analog stuff. He was a top-notch engineer. Didn't have necessarily an engineering degree from an engineering school to show credentials in that context, but that doesn't matter. This guy knew his stuff, and he was wise enough to know what he didn't know and admit it and bring on more people of the team and say, look, I need some strength in this area that I don't have, and I want to learn from you. I know that I want to learn. I probably don't have the time to learn it, but I need to have this skill set in the company here because we need it moving forward. And that's the tough thing, is admitting sometimes, for some of us anyway, just admitting, I don't know this, but I know that you do. Let's work together. Let me learn from you. Let's each learn a little bit in each other's area. Let's get this stuff resolved. And overall, the company benefits. And that's one of the key things to remember. It's not about, like you just said, Chris, this isn't personal job security. I've heard it said many years ago by a good friend of mine, Fred Gleason, who his manager told it to him. It's one of those things, if you want to be indispensable at a company, work to make yourself dispensable. In other words, bring people on who can replace you and mentor them, train them in what they need to know so that you can move on to more important things. It's not that you're making yourself or the company's going to get rid of you. Learn new things, pass the skills on to other people, and you end up with a stronger team all around. And that's really best for your employer, which frankly is the best job security you can get, is making sure your employer stays on the air.
Absolutely.
So spot on.
Absolutely.
With that one.
Hey, you're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech, episode 298, and Chris Tobin and I are enjoying talking to Sherrod Mundy. Sherrod is the VP of Engineering for Sky Angel Television Network. We're going to have a final wrap-up, a few words. Sherrod, you know, I'm going to surprise you with one thing. You've already regaled us with a couple of good learning experience stories. Toward the end of the show, we often do a tip of the week, and so after I tell folks about our third sponsor on the show, maybe you could tell us something that maybe you've run across in the last few days, weeks, or months, maybe a cool website, a cool piece of equipment, something that would help our viewers and listeners maybe with their own job. We'll call upon you for that in just a couple of minutes. Our show is brought to you in part by the folks at Axia. And I want to tell you about, a few minutes ago I told you about the Omnia 7 FM that we have in American Samoa. Well, you know, not to keep beating on American Samoa, but a few years ago, I installed an Axia Rack, RAQ, audio console in the newsroom at 93KHJ. And I'll tell you, before that, we had an analog console that was designed for news operations. And okay, I realize, you know, things can be installed well or installed poorly, but it seems like there was always a wire getting pulled out. There was always some hum or some buzz. There was always a ground loop, you know, in the studio situation between the newsroom and one of the on-air studios. And it was just always a constant problem. It was always a bit of a problem getting actualities off a cassette machine and recorded into the system. Well, we replaced that console, again, designed for news, with an Axia Rack, RAQ audio console. It's got six round faders. It's got an OLED display for each fader. It's got a simple on button that you punch it again, it goes off. So it's not meant to be manhandled all the time. It's meant to help you, you know, dub things in, do a newscast, play a couple of other, you know, actualities over it, over your newscast. And and that's what it's designed for. And if it's very compactly into the equipment rack that we have right next to the news anchor, I got to tell you, this thing has been fantastic. Our news anchor there, either the main anchor or her her assistant news director, they sound fantastic no matter which station that they're on. They also do reports for other international news organizations, and they always sound just crystal clear on this console, the rack console. Why? Well, because it's audio over IP. The cable runs are short. Your analog cable runs, an AES cable run, these are short. You've got a mixing engine. In this case, it is a Core 32. So we have a Core 32 there. Maybe we have a 16. Maybe it's a Core 16. I can't remember. We've got one of the two Core engines from Axia there. It has a built-in Ethernet switch that's already configured for Axia. You got no typing to do there. So you can plug in things like a power over Ethernet telephone. If you've got some nodes, you can plug those in. And, of course, there are trunk connections that go over to the main Ethernet switch that ties all the studios together. So any audio that goes into this thing, the analog run is, what, 3 or 4 or 5 feet long, and then it's audio over IP from that point. They bring up our newsroom in the control room, in either control room, and the audio is bit for bit, sample for sample, absolutely perfect. What's more is the rack console, it has all the same smarts built into it as other Axia consoles. So it's got talkback. You can, if you've got a source coming in, you can talk back to it. It's got automatic mix minus, so we can bring telephone calls in or codec calls in, and automatically, the mix minus is absolutely correct going back to that caller or back to that news reporter on the codec. You can also have external sources to listen to, so you can absolutely hear your cues on time. There's all kinds of things you can. There's a built-in vMixer, so you can mix two things together inside and monitor that if that's helpful to you in some way. I mix together the program audio, the monitor audio, and the preview bus. Mix those together so I don't need a total of 4 speakers in the room. I just have 2 speakers, and when they put something in preview, it dims down their main monitor and plays the preview audio through. It works perfectly. The training time for our news director on this was, about a minute and a half. I'm serious. It's so easy to use. Haven't had a service call with it yet, and it's been on the air there for, I think, almost 3 years. Check it out if you would. I love this console. I'm smiling about it. It's an honest smile. I've got one myself, and I just think it's terrific. It plays perfectly nicely with our Radius console that we also have there. The RAC, RAQ console from Axia. Check it out at the website's telosalliance.com, and then click on Axia and look for the RAC, RAQ audio console. All right, we're about to wrap it up, and Sherrod, can I put you on the spot and see if you have a tip that our listeners might enjoy?
Sure. One of the things Chris mentioned earlier kind of caught me, and he mentioned SNMP, Simple Network Monitoring Protocol. That's one of the things that I've used here at Sky Angel. It's really proven very valuable for us here to be able to remotely monitor equipment. One of our sites is actually unmanned after hours, and that's where all the primary automation plays this content out. And the way we monitor that is in part through SNMP. I've got a monitoring system called Cacti. It's actually open source. It doesn't cost a penny. But it takes a bit of time to configure it on the front end of things. There are a lot of modules out there that really allow you to add in all sorts of monitoring. You can do it for computer servers. You can do it for broadcast equipment, Nautel transmitters, like Chris said, certainly, and other things. And one of the things I've been monitoring lately is UPS, which is my tip of the week, is check your batteries in your big system building UPS long before they crater. We actually found out through an actual runtime test, where it wasn't really a runtime test, it was a generator run test, and we went to go to generator, and that brief little fraction of a second or two between when the generator or between when the utility power gets disconnected and the transfer switch goes over to the generator, that was not enough for our UPS to stay up. So we're in the process right now of that, and that's the sort of thing that with proper monitoring ahead of time, whether it's a UPS system or a computer or other things, be looking at your monitoring system, have it where it's logging it long term, where you can see trends on it, and really look at all sorts of different parameters, whether it's hard drive temperatures, to go back to Chris's analogy also, in an enclosure, hard drive temperatures, power supply, voltages, all those sort of things on most modern equipment can be monitored through SNMP, and it really has proven to be a very good lifesaver. In fact, I even used it for many years with our wide area networks. I monitored the network throughput just to make sure that we weren't oversaturating and oversubscribing our wide area network or our private internal network links, whether they were 100 megabit or gigabit. I made sure how much traffic was flowing through it. All that comes out of the modern network equipment. So get a monitoring system. There are many of them out there, all the way from low cost to no cost to very expensive. But don't just hope that your job is going to be good and everything's going to work until it fails. Get some monitoring in place proactively.
Good deal. SNMP, we ought to have a whole show with the instruction on that. We're about out of time. Chris Tobin, you've got a tip for us as well, I believe.
Two tips. One is the Studio Hub cabling. If you ever have a chance, get yourself a set of Studio Hub cabling so that you can use Cat 5 in between for testing equipment. I did this the other day. I had to run some tests on some audio gear on AES, and somebody says, well, we don't have all the cables. I happen to have my little Studio Hub kit. I was like, you know what? Let me just take this little connection set up, and we can do a real quick test. Paid off swimmingly. So give it some thought. It's well worth it. It's one of those things that you realize when it's too late. And the other tip is your smartphone camera. Many times you're doing work and you need to document something, or just, you know, you need a picture to remember what it was you're doing. So here I was doing some work on top of a building in New York City. That's a master antenna system for four times square. It's a Shively antenna system. And I was working with a friend of mine on a microwave link that happened to be just below that structure, below the a third catwalk down. And he was asking me something about what was up there and did we see any other things. And I said, well, there is a, I don't know if you can see it now, but there's a little microwave dish. Well, it's not little, right there. And that microwave dish happened to be next to his 5.85 panel, and he was trying to figure out why they were getting shadowed. So this picture this picture helped a lot. And I sent him the picture. I said, I circled it, you're using a graphic program. And he's like, oh, I didn't realize that was there. I'm like, yeah, well, that's probably part of the reason why you're having a problem. You need to call your tower riggers and tell them, swing it about 10 degrees the other way. So two tips. Studio Hub cabling is real handy to have in your toolkit. And then your smartphone camera system, you know, make use of it. It's well worth it.
Love it. I use a smartphone to take pictures of stuff that my head won't fit back in there. You know, like I've got a rack-mounted piece of equipment. I want to get the serial number off the back of it. My head won't quite fit back there. I reach my hand back there, put the camera in, hope I'm pointing to the right place. I may have to take the picture two or three times, but eventually, hey, there's the serial number. Now I can call support and let them know what the problem is, and here's the serial number. So, yeah, smartphone. The best camera in the world is the one you have with you. Right?
This is true.
Good tip.
You can also use it to take pictures of I'm warming up my sandwich on top of a TV transmitter. So, on the exhaust fan of a 30,000-watt UHF transmitter. It was good.
Hey, Chris, thanks very much. Sharon Monday, thank you very much for spending a little over an hour with us today. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Aprin.
All right, good day. And let us know, you know, how things move on and you know, just where engineering and life takes you from here. I'd like to catch up with you again sometime.
All right, I'll stay in touch. Look for me on LinkedIn.
All righty. Chris Tobin, thank you so much for being with us here as well and your contribution. Sure appreciate you and all the work you do to put in the show. By the way, you and I will be working together, I suppose, a week from today.
Yes.
In Las Vegas. Yeah, we'll probably be actually sitting in a nice courtyard with the bright sunshine, and we'll just do the show from there with a couple of beverages.
Absolutely. The beverages are a must.
All right. Thanks very much. Hey, thanks to our Vegas. That's right. We'll have to keep Elvis out of the way. Maybe we'll bring him on the show. Our show has been brought to you by the folks at Lavo and the Crystal Clear Console, also Omnia and the Omnia 7 FM audio processor, and by Axia and the Axia Rack, RAQ, audio console. Thanks so much to Suncast for doing a great job switching and producing our show. And thanks also to Andrew Zarian, owner of the GFQ Network, home of lots of other fine podcasts, anything from wrestling to Windows to about everything in between. All right, we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye, everybody.